40 years ago, this very day, an event which had a seismic effect on the future path of Irish history in what was a very, very different Ireland at the time, the death of the first hunger striker, Bobby Sands, 5th of May, 1981.
The news spread through the Catholic areas. Whistles were blown and dustbin lids clanged. People were summoned out onto the streets and prayers were said. But the rosaries said for Sands were, within minutes, overtaken by the noise of violence. While some prayed, others prepared the petrol bombs.
Well, that was the BBC report by Kate Adie on the immediate reaction to the death of Bobby Sands at the Maze prison. Nine more hunger strikers were to lose their lives that year. But of course, when he died, Bobby Sands had been the elected MP for Fermanagh South Tyrone, and that electoral success paved the way, as we now know, for Sinn Féin to change its focus and seek out the political route to peace. Dermot McNally, a Sligo resident, is on the line, who spent time in the H-Block Maze prison with Bobby Sands and knew him. Dermot, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. Well, what's your reflections today, 40 years ago, 40 years on?
Well, the day is still raw, and it's raw today, as it was then. I'll always remember that Tuesday. It was about 1:17 he died, and we were told the next morning we got the word passed through on the pipes that he had died. And tension within the H-Block then was very, very high. Emotions very, very raw. But we were under strict instructions not to react to any aggression from the screws. But when the screws came around, they didn't even look at us in the face. They didn't look at us in the eye. They just kept their heads to the ground and more or less had took the attitude of don't give any aggression or don't allow, because potentially it was a very explosive situation within the jails, especially with the whole raw emotion. But that night, the screws came under the wing. They were full of drink. And of course, they were all shouting and cheering that Bobby had died, and jumping up and down, says there's another Fenian day gone. And this was synonymous with the screws, like, you know, it was more sectarian with them than it was political.
And you were, as I say, in the H-Block at the same time as Bobby Sands and the hunger strikes when all this happened. Can you remember back when he began his hunger strike? Was there a feeling, did you ever think it would go as far as it did?
And that this would happen? Remember, you see, you have to go back to the first hunger strike now.
Of the previous November 1980 or whatever it was, October, November 1980,
And the hunger strike then ended, and there was a deal, sent through, and in the end, it wasn't in writing, and the Brits reneged on it. And it basically bounced around at the end of the day, they give us our clothes, they give us everything at the end, because of the pressure from within the jail, from the prison officers, from the Northern Ireland office, and from the secure cots within the British government, they changed their mind and said it was prison, civilian-type clothes. So that in itself, and the hunger strike had ended. So there was discussions afterwards in the wings. I'll always remember that discussion happening in the wing, and because on the far side of the wing, the first two people who were up to speak would have been Francie Hughes and Remy McCreesh. They were in the cell. And Francie got up the door and just says, hunger strike. Remy got up and said, hunger strike. And every single cell said the exact same thing. Another hunger strike. So obviously, they went around all the wings, all the blocks, and had that discussion within all the prisoners, and it was synonymous that there was going to be another hunger strike. Now, the way the hunger strike was planned was that a number would go on the hunger strike, and the same for Armagh Prison, for the women prisoners. But Bobby thought that it would be too emotional for people to handle outside women then on hunger strike at that particular time. And so he knew, because of the circumstances of the last hunger strike, that somebody would probably have to die. So that's why he stagnated once going on the hunger strike and the start of the hunger strike. Now, we, the prisoners, always thought that it would go till the... We knew in our hearts of hearts that somebody was going to die.
But you didn't think there was going to be 10. It would end up with 10 losing their lives.
We did not.
So from what you're saying, Dermot, and you remember the reaction and the conditions in the prison at the time, there were no shortage of people willing to go on hunger strike.
No, I remember that discussion came up and names went forward. They came to the door. We were all called up to the door and we were told that there was a prospect of another hunger strike, and if another hunger strike did take place, you know, who would be, is there anybody willing to volunteer to go to the hunger strike, and that it would be to the death. And hopefully that it wouldn't be, but you have to take it that it would go to the death. And I was shocked at the amount of names that went forward. You know, and it was just unbelievable. But then what happened is, if anybody has any medical problems, they were taken off the list. Because if you have some medical problem, then that would lighten the many days that you can go on hunger strike, and therefore you had the chance of dying prematurely, which did happen to Martin Harrison. Like.
Yeah. What are your memories? I mean, how well did you know Bobby Sands? What sort of a person was Bobby Sands?
Well, I didn't know Bobby on the outside or anything like that. And how I knew Bobby was that he was in the same block as us. And every Sunday we'd meet at Mass. And he'd be down the back talking to Big McFarlane and his best friend, Shana Welch, and Brenton Hughes. And, you know, the whole black staff would be down talking among themselves or working out strategies for the following week and what tactics they were going to use. And later on, we were brought to court, myself and Bobby. It was on a civilian matter, like, and you weren't allowed to wash or anything. And they took us from the blocks down to the cell block. And then forcefully washed us, dragged us out of the cell. You had to sit on the ground. They dragged you out and threw you in the bath and disinfected and scrubbed you and cut your hair and threw you back in the cell again. So it was when you went to court, we were in Chichester Street in Belfast. I'll never forget it, because then they separated the two. That's how I got to know them, because we were standing at three steel doors, believe it or not. We talked for about 2 hours that night, just casually talked. You know, I'd tell them all about Lurgan and where I was from, and he was telling me about Belfast and who we knew and the blacks and who we knew from the area and all the Republicans. And basically, and you know, and then we got a few slaps like when we were getting washed. And I always remember coming back anyway, and on Sunday in the Mass, the first thing he came over to me and he says, "You all right, Dermot?" And I said, "Oh, I'm sorry. Keep the faith, keep the faith." That's what he said to me. And then every week after that, he would say the same. Now, I'll say one thing about Bobby. Bobby wasn't a big man. He was small in stature. I know I'm small, like, but he was small and he was skinny. But, and he was great. He was a great singer, because we lay at nights, and I mean cold nights with just a blanket around us, and Bobby would be up at the door singing over in the far wing. And we could hear, we would just lie, and he would sing us to sleep. He was a fantastic singer. He was a great poet. And some of his sayings, like, you know, there's synonymous there, like, Chucky Har La, you know, let our revenge be the laughter of our children. And if you actually look at them phases, it says a lot. He's not talking about revenge. He's not talking about violence. He's saying, let the laughter of our children be our revenge. And that says a lot, you know, about Bobby Sands.
I'm sure it brings back all sorts of memories for you and anybody who was in the H block at that time. But as you say, you didn't for a minute think there were going to be more than one person losing their lives. What are your thoughts 40 years on? I mean, we could be discussing for an hour whether the lives of 10 men was worth it. What are your feelings on that?
Well, my feelings on that was, in them days, the hunger strikes at that particular time, it was Maggie Thatcher took the war to the prisoners. She was using the prisoners to try and criminalise the whole struggle. And if the hunger strike hadn't ended with 10 men then, there could have been 20 men then. They were prepared to go that far. This was a battle between the British government and the Republican movement, and especially the prisoners inside. She took the war straight to them. We took the war to her in jail. We paid a heavy price. Was that, if you look at that price today, in terms of that price today, it laid the whole foundation for electoral politics, for the way forward, for the for the peace process to begin. And if you look at the peace process, before it, you look at it led to the escape of Long Cash, the hunger strike smashed criminalisation, the escape smashed the hate blocks. Most of the people involved in the escape ended up negotiating with the British government in relation to the peace process and the prisoners, and they were instrumental in peace. Today, 40 years later, they're talking now all about the United Ireland. So we are close, and I believe we are close, and we have come a long, long way, and a lot of people are alive today that wouldn't be alive if it was not for the peace process. And I believe the whole hunger strikes and that whole era laid the foundation for that to happen.